British Prime Minister Tony Blair announced today that he will leave 10 Downing Street at the end of June. During his decade in power, he changed the fusty image of the Labour Party and into that of New Labour. He presided over economic prosperity at home and became reviled by many of his countrymen for his strong support of the war in Iraq. Oxford professor and writer Timothy Garton-Ash spoke with Tony Blair about his legacy in the garden of the Prime Minister's London residence and joins us in a moment. If you have questions about Blair's successes and failures, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Timothy Garton-Ash is also a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford, and he's with us now on the line from Oxford. Nice to have you on the program today.
Hello, nice to be with you.
And you asked the Prime Minister about the essence of his foreign policy, the essence of Blairism, as you put it, and he replied, liberal interventionism. Explain to us what he meant and what the, where that policy has been.
Well, it was a very interesting answer, because at the end of 10 years, here's a man who knows exactly what he stands for. And what he meant by that was, I believe in intervening in other countries to make them better. And, of course, that started with us intervening in places like Sierra Leone, in Bosnia, above all in Kosovo, to prevent the Serbs driving out the Kosovar Albanians. That was, as he himself says, a formative moment for him, and he went on to enunciate what he called the doctrine of international community. The problem comes, not just for me, but for many of his compatriots, I think many people in the world, when he says Iraq was also an example of liberal interventionism, because I think that's a highly arguable point. And, you know, there are many great achievements of Blair's foreign policy, including, in my view, Kosovo, but the shadow hanging over them all is, of course, Iraq.
And it seems strange that there's that old line about Ireland being the graveyard of British politicians. Just this past week, Blair achieved an enormous triumph in Northern Ireland, something that had seemed elusive for more than a quarter century. Yet that will be very much overshadowed by Iraq.
That's right. And let us say that the list of successes is long, often like that in Northern Ireland, building on what had gone before. I mean, what he did in Northern Ireland was a great achievement for patient diplomacy on his part, for all his tact and charm and perseverance. And it's an amazing, an absolutely amazing moment. People who were trying to more or less kill each other 15 years ago, sitting down to govern together. Similarly, the strength of the British economy, which is great, the strength of our welfare state. Much else he's done builds on the achievements of others, starting in many ways actually with Margaret Thatcher. But over it all, this huge black cloud of Iraq, which has so many negative consequences, many of them you and your listeners will know, but you also have to remember that it has a terrific direct blowback on us because of the Muslim population in Britain and the connection to the terrorist attacks on London.
There is another area. We'll certainly talk about Iraq with some of our callers in just a moment. But in 1997, when he was first prime minister, he promised to give Britain leadership in Europe, which Britain and Europe both needed. This is the other. We think of the Atlantic side of his policy, but obviously Europe, the other side.
Yeah. What the other thing he and I have talked quite a few times over the years, and he's always said that Britain has, as it were, to stand on two legs, that the two crucial alliances for Britain are that with the United States and that with Europe. And he would claim, and I think it's right, that he's strengthened them both, that they're in better shape than they were 10 years ago when the Conservatives left office. But an irony of his leadership is that he's now incredibly close to the United States, to a Republican president in a way that, you know, Churchill or Margaret Thatcher might have been, but it's slightly unusual for someone who was supposed to be a socialist. And on the other hand, the ties are not as close as they might have been with Europe. And I think actually he's achieved less on the European front than on the transatlantic one.
And his failure there, you suggest, is his failure to take on the great barons of the British media, the newspapers there, who are such Eurosceptics, these unelected people, but people who were very important to him and his party.
That's right. I mean, I think, you know, there's a big list of successes and there are three big failures. One is Iraq. The second is to think that Britain alone can sway the United States, can change American policy. It has to be Europe. Britain alone is not big enough to change American or influence American policy significantly. In order to do that, you need to have a strong Europe speaking with a single voice. And Blair's problem has been that throughout his premiership, to some extent, he's run scared of our media barons, of Rupert Murdoch above all, will be familiar to you on that side of the Atlantic, but also to some of what we call the tabloids, the mid-market papers with millions and millions of readers, who are very anti-European. And I think he ducked this one. He never quite took them on.
Let's get some listeners in on the conversation. Our guest is Timothy Garton-Ash, professor of European Studies at the University of Oxford and a regular weekly columnist for the British newspaper The Guardian. 800-989-8255 is our number. Email is talk@npr.org. Let's start with Andrew. Andrew calling us from Illinois.
Yeah, my question was, do you think that possibly the eventual outcome in Iraq will change the way that Tony Blair is viewed by historians down the road? I mean, will a more positive outcome help him be viewed more friendly?
It would do, and that's what he would say. He would say the jury is still out on Iraq and he will await history's verdict. I'm a historian, and I have to say that I think Iraq has been one of the most comprehensive foreign policy disasters in our history in the last 50 years. You actually have to go back to the Suez Crisis 50 years ago to see such a disaster. The negative consequences, not just in Iraq, the hundreds of thousands of people killed or maimed, the anarchy over which we have presided, the huge cost both in life and money, the negative impacts across the Middle East, the way in which Iran has been hugely strengthened out of this, the fact that U.S. intelligence agencies say Iraq has actually become a breeding ground for a new generation of terrorists, the damage done to our moral authority in the world. I think that we can already say that it has been a pretty great disaster. Now, often in history, there are unintended consequences. And it may be in 30 years' time there'll be some unintended consequences of Iraq. But I don't think many historians will say, oh, I see, so that means Blair and Bush were right about Iraq. I don't think that's how it's going to be.
It'll sort of be irrelevant by that point.
Well, I think that so many other factors will have come into play, you see, by that time, that people
right.
won't be able to say, oh, that was because Blair and Bush did what they did, and that's what we're talking about now. And that's why, by the way, a lot of the great British public are so angry with Blair, because a lot of people are angry with Blair. If you took away Iraq, his record would be overwhelmingly positive. He'd been one of the most successful prime ministers of at least the last half century.
Thanks, Andrew, for the call.
Thank you.
And when you suggested in your column after the interview at number 10 that there were positive aspects to his prime ministership, the response was furious, you write.
Well, there is this strange thing that, as you know, there was a website in the United States saying Blair for president, and in my experience, he has this extraordinary popularity in the United States among both Republicans and Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Here, the guy is much admired by a lot of people, but absolutely hated by many people on the left. And it's partly that he wasn't a natural man of the old Labour Party anyway, and it's partly that he got into bed with George W. Bush and did Iraq. And he's truly hated on that score. He's regarded, I mean, many people would say, gosh, he's a war criminal. I regard this as a hysterical verdict, I have to say. I think he took a very tough political decision. I think he made the wrong decision over Iraq. But I think he's made a lot of good calls. And I think he's been, you know, a responsible and statesmanlike prime minister.
There is the essence of Blairism in foreign policy, you wrote, he told me, is liberal interventionism. His foreign policy has been about combining soft and hard power, about strengthening our alliances with the United States and the European Union in order to face the supranational challenges of our time. And there are two ways to respond to that.
Yeah. One is to say, sorry, it's the wrong agenda. It's absolutely, and quite a lot of people here would say that we don't want to be close to the United States, people say on the left. we don't want to be close to Europe, people say on the right. We don't want to go marching around the world intervening in other people's affairs and so on. Well, that's fine. My position is that I think he's got the right agenda, and you have to judge him by it. And that's how I come up with that balance sheet, which has quite a lot positive, but those three big mistakes: Iraq, failing effectively to influence Washington, which I think even many Americans would say the United States needs a good friend who can tell it when it's going wrong, which is what friends do. And in my view, that friend has to be the European Union. You know, we are the other big grouping of the rich and the free in the world.
We're speaking with Timothy Garton Ash, Professor of European Studies at the University of Oxford. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Susan on the line. Susan with us from Arkansas.
Oh, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I find it fascinating that Tony Blair's greatest achievement and greatest failure are both military in nature. I mean, when you look at Northern Ireland, and he was so patient and so willing to advise and take advice and stick with the cause, he knew what he had to do. And what a shame that he could not give advice and influence George Bush to be more patient. The old diplomacy approach.
Yes, mind you, bear in mind that it was at least partly because of British influence that we did at least go to the United Nations before going to war in Iraq. So he was pushing in the direction of diplomacy, and ultimately, of course, you know, he couldn't stop the Bush administration going to war, indeed going to war when they wanted to go to war. But I wouldn't say it was his greatest achievement and his greatest failure, because I think overall his greatest achievement is to have ensured that Britain is one of the better places to live in the world, that it's a good deal richer than it was 10 years ago, rather more at peace with itself. It's a rather more modern and even, dare I say, liberal country. In Britain, liberal is still a compliment. And a rather more just society, perhaps, a rather more relaxed society, so that, you know, frankly, the balance sheet is about the kind of place Britain has become. And actually, I think, you know, as a historian, it's that unique combination of Margaret Thatcher and Tony Blair, who over the last 30 years have really transformed this country in many, many ways for the better.
One of the interesting things you point out in your column is you, of course, have to measure statesmen against their contemporaries. And, of course, there's been 12 years of Chirac and a long run for Gerhard Schroeder in Germany as well.
Not to mention George W. Bush.
And George W. Bush. And if you say, who's better off after this long run by these politicians?
I asked the question, who would you rather be, Britain after 10 years of Blair, France after 12 years of Jacques Chirac, Germany after 8 years of Gerhard Schroeder, or the United States in the seventh year of George W. Bush? Tick only one box.
Susan, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Brian in Charlotte, North Carolina. How do you think Blair's absence will affect Angela Merkel's push for a revived European Union constitution? And do you think Blair is staying until the 27th of June specifically so he can participate in the June summit on that subject?
Very good question, and the answer is absolutely yes. I know that from the horse's mouth. And what he's hoping to do is to get in place a rather modest treaty, or at least the terms for negotiating a rather modest treaty, which he hopes to get in place with the aid of Angela Merkel and the new French president, Nicolas Sarkozy, who's a great mate of Tony Blair's. They love Sarkozy at number 10. They think he's a man in their own mold. And one of the ironies of Blair's departure is that the dream team for him in Europe was Angela Merkel, Nicolas Sarkozy, and Tony Blair. And just as the dream team emerges, he has to take his leave.
Tell us a little bit about the man who will take his place, Gordon Brown.
Gordon Brown is a riddle wrapped in a mystery, wrapped in an enigma. He's the opposite. You know, Blair is this great communicator, this relaxed, charming, extrovert, rather self-depreciating figure. Gordon Brown is a massive, rather lowering presence, son of a Scottish vicar, a considerable intellectual, a very fine finance minister. And you know what? Nobody quite knows what he's going to be like as prime minister. Prime minister is a job like no other. And so we have yet to see, as it were, the sunnier sides of Gordon Brown. I can tell you he's a whole lot more relaxed than he used to be a few years ago. One thing we do know, he's a huge friend and fan of the United States. If anything, he's even more Americanophile than Tony Blair. So I certainly don't think the American relationship is going to get any weaker under Gordon Brown.
But he perhaps not as close with President Bush.
Not only perhaps. I mean, he would have to be extremely stupid to hitch his chariot to the weary horse of George W. Bush. I mean, he knows perfectly well that when he, Gordon Brown, fights the next British election, there'll be another president in the White House, and that about the most unpopular thing Tony Blair has done is to get so close to George Bush. So he will certainly take his distance, but while remaining, I think, very pro-American.
Timothy Garton-Ash, thanks very much. We appreciate your spending the evening, your evening with us.
Great pleasure.
Timothy Garton-Ash, professor of European Studies at Oxford and a columnist for the Guardian newspaper. His most recent book is Free World, America, Europe, and the Surprising Future of the West. He joined us today from Oxford in England. Today's discussions continue on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Ira Flatow's here tomorrow with Science Friday. We'll see you Monday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.